It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're listening to episode 207 of the Marathon Running Podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk about running slow to get faster. This is the Marathon Running Podcast by Letty and Ryan from We Got the Runs. Join us in our running community for weekly content that is motivational, educational, and inspirational, and let the Marathon Running Podcast take you from the starting line to the finish line and beyond. Hey runners, and welcome back to another episode of the Marathon Running Podcast. My name is Letty. I am flying solo again this week, but I only have myself to blame for that. I'm going to be out of town this weekend, so there will be no Ryan today. And I hope you guys bear with me anyway. If you guys are new to the channel, welcome back. We do a weekly Marathon Running Podcast on all things running. We bring you the experts on training, nutrition, resilience, you name it. And we do race recaps as well, which are some of my favorite episodes. In addition, we also try to get on guests that have a story to share, that is motivational. So that's us in a nutshell. If you are a longtime listener, thank you for coming back on. A couple of things before we hop into today's topic. You guys know that we now are on YouTube. We appreciate anyone that will listen to or watch our videos on there as well and give us some feedback. I'm a huge fan of constructive criticism. I prefer the constructive criticism arriving in my inbox rather than on a bad review. So if you want to check out some of our videos, this week we posted yet another one on VO2 max testing. You can find us by going to YouTube and just typing at running podcast into the search bar, and you should see the same image of our podcast there. Thank you guys for doing that. Another quick thing, we've been doing monthly giveaways on Instagram. For this current one, we are giving away 5 boxes of U-cans, so you would get a 12-pack of U-cans if you win this giveaway. And for that, you have to get on Instagram, and you can find us there under the same thing, at Running Podcast. All right, so enough of that. Today's episode is going to be very epic because we have one of my favorite guests on, which is Coach David Levine. He is the LA Roadrunners head coach. So under him, there is all the pacers for the LA Marathon. And I'm not sure how many, I want to say more than 1,000 runners that yearly train for the LA Marathon. And he is the one that writes all their training plans. He has a ton of knowledge. He's himself run a ton of marathons, triathlons, all that stuff. And he caters towards these specific training groups. So they have training groups 1 through 10, and all of them are different speeds, obviously. And yeah, so he has a lot of knowledge on how running works, the science behind it. He's a little bit of a science nerd, and I love guests like that. So we're going to hear from him about running slow to run fast. So I let him explain all that stuff. He's better at it. So without any further ado, we're now going to play my conversation with David Levine. All right, so I'm back on with David Levine, the head coach of the LA Roadrunners. David, thank you for joining me again.
Thanks for having me.
I thought it would be great to bring you on because I know that you deal with hundreds and hundreds of runners, and you have new runners, seasoned runners. And how do you go about that, right? You're saying everything is a big mathematical equation. And then, of course, running slow is something that can help us build a better engine to get to that level.
To get farther, to be able to build endurance, fitness. Fitness is just a nebulous term that means just general ability. And part of that ability is endurance, being able to go farther. And part of that is going slower, or the ability to go slower.
I love those analogies.
So if you're running zone 2, you want low heart rate, because that's where you're going to gain those things that you don't get from high heart rate. Specifically, you're going to get more of a fat burning engine, right? For endurance. I know I've said this a million times, but the greater reservoir of resource for fuel is fat for all of us humans, you know, even the thinnest of people. The limited reservoir, and you use fat more at low heart rate. So you want what we call endurance is really just low heart rate training to train your body to consume more fat, right? So basically, you know, I have a group in Griffith Park and I have a group here in Santa Monica. The group in Griffith Park, the group in Santa Monica recently on the Rose Bowl half had about, you know, about 30, maybe 35% PR rate. I was just curious. I had them raise their hands. I really don't care about PRs, but I was just curious. So about 30, 35% PR rate. They're always getting through water tables quick. They're always getting the pace to marathon race pace. Now, the group in Griffith Park that I coached for 15 years, and I'm not really there full time, I'm more in Santa Monica. The group in Griffith Park, they're kind of look like a group of lazy people. They, you know, even the 10 minute per mile groups, they'll like a 20 foot hill, they'll slow down. And they're walking up the hill. This is a run only group. They're walking up the hill, not a steep hill. They could run it. And they stop at water tables. They'll kick back a thing, re-pour. They'll kick back another one. I always say treat water tables kind of like a bar, kick back a few, tell a joke, and then move on. And the Griffith Park group does that. Now, you should understand the Griffith Park groups traditionally had about a 60 to 70% PR rate because they really kept their heart rates low. They really built with endurance, low heart rate, right? Use fat more at low heart rate, glycogen, carbohydrate at higher heart rate. I'm using my hands and it's on a voice chat, so no one can see me. Anyway, obviously, speed work, if you want to go fast, you need to retrain fast. So you zone four, you know, you then run real fast, get through water tables quick. But those are only short bouts. You probably don't need that much water. Those are short and fast, midweek usually. The long runs, you want to just maintain that low heart rate. And that's the huge, huge difference. The lazy group in Griffith Park is having huge success because they're maintaining low heart rate and they get it. They're building endurance. They're going able to go farther. They're not burning out. I remember one marathon. My group in Griffith Park was separate from the Roadrunners, the now Roadrunner group. But somebody said to me, you know, I was watching my group going by and they seemed like they were doing great. They're speeding up toward the end of the marathon. They had this endurance. They were doing great. And somebody came up to me from the Roadrunner and said, man, they're dropping like flies. I'm thinking, what? There's this huge difference in mentality in training. The one looks like a bunch of lazy people in training. The other, they're just pushing themselves and kicking themselves and they do worse. And there's some great reality to that in terms of training. Be lazy in your training, but just it's more about volume. You know, pro athletes don't do 20-mile runs. I get this question all the time. Why do we only do a 20-mile run? I create these 20-mile runs that I loathe. Greater risk of injury. People need greater recovery time, so they end up with less volume overall. And it's really about the total volume you do, not from one run, but all the volume you do. So, you know, next day, you're doing way less, you have to do less volume. So they're not getting the same volume of fitness. Had they only done 16 miles, 14 miles, and they did like 14 miles the next day, they would have 24 miles rather than 20 miles and then nothing the next day. Make sense? More volume, greater fitness.
I think it comes down to the fact that it's kind of instilled in us with everything else in life. If you want to get good at something, you have to do more of it. And when it comes to running, we don't conceptualize it as running. We think about it as, okay, if you want to run fast, you have to do more of running fast. But for running, it always kind of, you know, I know I've heard you say it a bunch of times and I've learned it by living through it, even though in my head, you know, it's really hard to see that make sense.
Yeah. There was a guy named, Alan, fast, amazing Ironman triathlete. I can't think of his first name, Alan. Anyway, he always said, you know, it's totally counterintuitive and you just have to trust me on this when it works. Yeah, there's great truth to that. It doesn't make sense, but that the lazy group would do way better than the group that's really pushing themselves and maintaining marathon race pace. And, you know, marathon race pace is greater risk of injury because you're pushing yourself, you're going a little faster, there's more pounding. So less risk of injury, and you get the same benefits from marathon race pace versus what we call easy pace or zone two. Marathon race pace might be considered zone three, you know, or half marathon race pace, the high end of zone three. So yeah, be lazy in your training. I know no one is going to buy into that.
Yeah.
No one, but absolutely. You should see the group in Griffith Park. They're just running and running, and suddenly they're walking up that hill and they look like, and they're hanging out at water tables and telling jokes. And the other problem is with dehydration and fatigue, your heart rate's going higher and higher and higher and higher to a point where you're anaerobic, you're no longer using fat as a resource for fuel. And if the whole point of your endurance training long run is to train your body to use fat more efficiently, and your heart rate is so high, you're not using any fat whatsoever. You know, you get to a point threshold where your heart rate is so high, you're no longer using any fat. Well, if you're not using any fat and your whole point to the run is to train your body to use fat more efficiently, what the heck are you doing? You're just wasting your time. You know, the end of the run where you're breathing hard, you're probably anaerobic. You're probably no longer using fat at all. You're just wasting your time.
Okay, so I'm just going to ask you this. I just recently read a lot about Calvin Kiptum's training and seeing what he runs. And obviously at the 2 hour mark, you probably know this better, but he probably runs around a 4:30 mile minute per mile. I can't even say it right because it's so unfamiliar. But his easy runs, he is known to run at about 6:45, 7 minute pace, which I know sounds fast, but it's, you know, it's almost, do the math, two minutes and more slower than what he does. So if we take that percentage, that's almost, you know, almost 50%. So we can really add a lot of minutes to our slow run. But now I guess with that, I want to ask you, is there anything that you've heard that running slow, is there a too slow?
Yes. Sitting down right now, I am at too low a heart rate to effectively train aerobically. So, yeah, if I was to walk from, and it depends on the individual, because, you know, we have walkers that, man, they just, they're beginners and they start walking and, man, they're breathing hard, you know, and they're walking. So everybody has their limit. And I think the answer to this is obviously if an expensive heart rate monitor or my cheapo heart rate monitor, I'm sorry, Coros, but it's 230 is cheap. It's a great watch. I'm sorry. But at any rate, there are limits to where it's too slow, but it's based on the individual, based on like heart rate, really. Or you can just listen to your breathing because your breathing is indicative of your heart rate. So if you're breathing hard, you slow it down, you know?
Yeah.
I remember the first time I had a coach a couple of decades ago, and I did blood lactate testing, so I knew right where my aerobic zone was. My zone two was from like one, I have a larger heart rate. So it depends on the size of your heart as to the beats per minute that you go. No one has the same size heart. So someone running in the same pace group may have different heart rate ranges than the other person in the same pace group. They may finish the marathon same exact time, but their heart rates are very different because their size of their hearts are different. Especially you get a petite woman with a big giant guy, you know, that their heart rates are totally different. So their ranges. So I remember my heart rate range was something like 114 to 128. I was aerobic and it was 90 degrees outside. So I was given this task to run from 118 to 128 heart rate back decades ago. And I would get like maybe 100 meters and I'd have to walk. And this to me was the most frustrating, get my heart rate down, right? This was the most frustrating thing in the planet to me. And I was in Griffith Park, if anyone knows it, and I was on my own, and I looked around and no one was really watching me, thankfully, on this horse trail. And I was punching the air and cursing, and I looked like a complete, like, total lunatic. And I was so angry and hated that. But eventually I got used to it more and more and more, and I learned to engage, or I began to engage more slow twitch muscle fibers. You know, a lot of people can't run that slow because their slow twitch muscles needed to go that slow or dormant. They need to engage them by going that slow. Anyway, yeah.
So yeah, I was going to actually just ask you about that because, you know, besides turning yourself into a fat burning engine that everybody calls it, there are some other benefits of running slowly. And you just mentioned the slow twitch muscle fiber adaptation. Maybe you can talk to us a little bit about how that all works with fast switch, slow switch muscle fiber.
Ooh, I like that word, adaptation. Cool. I'm going to use that. it's a funny thing that over hundreds of thousands, maybe 2+ million years of human evolution, we have gone through this thing that maybe you in Florida and us in Southern California don't really experience, but it's called snow. And, you know, snow won't allow crops to grow. And so we went through periods of winter starvation where we would have to be in our little huts or our little caves, you know, and try and find fuel, wood to burn to stay warm and use animal skins to stay warm. But we went through periods of starvation. So we developed as human beings the ability to deal with starvation periods where we can go several days without eating anything. And the reason we are able to do that is we shut off all non-essential muscles, you know, to a point where most normal people only use like 45% of their muscles, right? So if you want to go slow, most of your muscles, 55% or more, are dormant. They're just sitting there because if they weren't dormant, you would have to feed them. Well, during periods of starvation, you don't want to have to feed anything. The less, you know, this is what we call homeostasis. Your body will go back to a period of homeostasis when you're not exercising, when you're not strength training, where you lose that extra strength, you lose that extra muscles, muscles become dormant. Specifically to go back to that point of your least efficiency so you can go through a period of starvation, right? Because if you're not running around or you're not farming or you're not exerting yourself in some way to create food, and you're just sitting there self, you're starving, you want to use the least amount of food that you can to survive that starvation period. So that's the only reason, you know, if we did bodybuilding and kept building and building and building, you'd be the size of a house. And no, your body won't allow that. Women included. Women do not get that big from bodybuilding. So don't fear strength training. At any rate, you need to go that slow to engage those muscles that will take you that slow, which is a weird idea. You know, how do you go that slow when you can't go that slow because you don't have the muscles engaged to go that slow and you want to engage those muscles to go that slow? It's like a catch-22. It's impossible. Well, here's the wrapper, the runaround, the around that problem is if you walk and then for a few seconds and then slowly start to jog and slowly start to run and slowly get up to your normal. We all kind of have that normal pace where we have all these normal muscles that we use at that pace that are already recruited. They're not dormant. You get up to that pace and then you do that for a few minutes and then you start walking again. You don't have to stop. You just start walking again for a few seconds and then you slowly build up and build up and do that. Like over the course of 3 weeks, every run you do, you'll hate it at first, but slowly you'll start recruiting those dormant muscles to engage. And that's the term recruit when it's dormant. You engage muscles when you're sitting still and you start using them again, you know, when you stand up and you're, you know, not quite, you know, as fast. It takes a little while to warm up the muscles. That's just engaging already recruited non-dormant muscles. But to really recruit dormant muscles, that's the way to do it. Walk it out a few seconds, slowly start building up. And after about 3 or so weeks, you won't hate me anymore for making you do that. Because at first, I know I was there. I was punching the air and cursing and, oh, I hated it so much. Anyway.
So to play devil's advocate, we know what fast switch fiber muscle recruitment is for. It's going to be for running fast. So what do we really need slow twitch muscles for?
Going farther. Because keep in mind, remember, you know, if you want to maintain a slightly lower heart rate so you're not depleting your glycogen levels too much, you need to be able to go slower. There are a lot of people out there that train at some certain pace that their body is accustomed to, and it may not be slow enough. They may get to a point where they're in their training, they're slowing down and slowing down and slowing down and burning out. And they can only go so far. Well, if you want to go farther, you need to be able to go slower. If you need to be able to go slower, you need to have those slower muscle fibers recruited to be able to go that slow. A lot of people just can't go that slow and they hit the wall. I always say it's a trick question. What mile do you hit the wall at? And the answer would hopefully be you don't hit the wall till the finish line. But most people will say, well, 18, 20, 22, somewhere around there. Well, why are they hitting the wall? Well, they're depleting their glycogen levels too quickly. They're not taking in enough carbohydrate, or they're just going plain too fast and depleting glycogen levels too quickly. Pro athletes want to do a negative split. They want the second half of their marathon to be faster than the first part of the marathon. Well, how the heck do you do that? You need to recruit those slower muscle fibers, just like Kiptum. Yeah, that just broke the world record.
At this time, we want to thank our sponsor, UCAN. Are you tired of a spike and crash and GI distress that comes with the sugar-based sports nutrition? It's time to give UCAN a try. UCAN uses steady-release carbs instead of sugars, so you don't feel the highs and the lows in energy. UCAN powders, gels, and bars are powered by Life Steady, a patent starch-based carbohydrate that was originally developed as a medical food to help children maintain stable blood sugar throughout the night. It's backed by science and truly unique in energy source. Clinically proven to help blood sugar stable during exercise, Lift Steady supports sustained performance and optimal energy levels. I've tried UCAN now for the past couple of months and I've been happy with my long runs and how I feel. Also, they don't taste bad and after mile 15, I can still stomach them. Top marathon runners in the US, including Emily Sisson, Sarah Hall, Emma Bates, and Kara D'Amato all use UCAN for fuelings. So why shouldn't you give them a try? Especially because Marathon Running podcast listeners have a chance to try 4 gels for free. All you pay for is the cost of shipping. So head over to ucan.co/MRP, which, by the way, stands for Marathon Running Podcast, to claim this offer and get your free samples. If you are already using UCAN and you want that 20% discount, you can just go to ucan.co and save those 20% with code MRP. We're also having all this linked in our show notes. And now back to the show. That's awesome. So another benefit that we hear about is that slow-paced running promotes mitochondrial density and capillarization. Some big terms. So maybe talk to us a little bit about that and how that works. I mean, I guess everything kind of goes towards running economy and making us stronger, but tell us what happens in our bodies.
Oh my God, evil science. I think science is great. Science suggests that you only gain certain things of this long list you get at any pace, any heart rate, at low heart rate, zone 2. And this goes into what we call endurance building. These things all have to do with greater efficiency, but mostly greater efficiency at utilizing fat, the greater resource for fuel, right? If you can use fat more efficiently, you got a greater resource, bigger resource for fuel that you tap into. So, okay. You mentioned two of them. You get more mitochondria density, meaning your mitochondria take carbohydrate and fat and they turn it into ATP, which is the fuel that your body uses. ATP, adenosine, tri, meaning three, phosphate, meaning phosphate. So three phosphate molecules and the fuel, ATP, adenosine triphosphate, is the fuel your body uses. What happens is you are a nuclear reactor. And that more mitochondria creates more of this ATP from fat and carbs. So ATP, your three molecules of phosphate, one molecule will break away from the other two molecules, causing this explosion, causes an electron to fire out. That's why your body warms up, because you have this nuclear process that you are exploding molecules, phosphate molecules in this case, one away from the other two. And an explosion basically releases the muscle, enabling you to move, right? I won't go into that. That's a little complicated. So there's one thing you get only from low heart rate work, which is more of these little things that reside in every cell of your entire body called mitochondria, right? They turn carbs and fats into ATP fuel. Right. You also get more oxidative enzymes, meaning you get these enzymes that enable you to metabolize fat more efficiently, only at low heart rate, because you're training your body to use more fat because you're at low heart rate. You use more fat at low heart rate. Right. So you're training your body at low heart rate. Anyway, oxidative enzymes. And the third one is you get more capillary veins and arteries only at low heart rate. And capillary veins and arteries are the smallest veins and arteries that go in and out of the muscle. So you get more nutrients and oxygen into the muscle more quickly and more waste product like CO2, hydrogen, nitrogen, getting that out of the muscle more quickly because you have more capillary veins and arteries. Only at low heart rate. Now, there have been claims by people in like, what is the term, the group that does fast, high heart rate, everything. CrossFit believes that high heart rate is great for everything. And you develop all these things, even at high heart rate, even though really no science has backed them up. There are no studies that really indicate that that's true. You do start at a little lower heart rate. Well, even doing CrossFit, your heart rate starts low. So there might be some reason where you will gain some of those low heart rate things because your heart rate is still low. Even when you start running fast, it takes a while for your heart rate to get up there. But you're kind of wasting your time if you're building for a marathon. You're not getting the true endurance training that you need if you're in CrossFit. Nothing against CrossFit. If you want to train for a mile, you know, strength, you know, speed work. Everything, you know, it's more about speed for a mile or sprinting 400 meters. You know, everything changes. You know, your training changes. You know, in training, you actually benefit from taking in fewer gels and going at lower heart rate and really focusing on consuming fat to make your body more efficient for fat consumption. And marathon race pace, you're getting a little of all of it. You are consuming more glycogen from carbohydrate, becomes glycogen, and it is a limited reservoir, and you can hit the wall if you deplete it too much. But you're still using a lot of fat, even at zone three. You're still aerobic because zone two, you're really focusing on fat consumption and becoming more efficient with fat. Then the extreme of running high heart rate, then you're raising the bar. So threshold runs are all about raising the bar where you're using fat at a little higher heart rate. So you can essentially go faster, farther because your heart rate's a little higher. You're still using fat because you've trained your body from running really, really fast. Now running really, really slow, or running in zone three or marathon race pace, you're still using a lot of fat. And yes, you're consuming glycogen a little more, which is why we take in gels, we take in carbohydrate during our race. So that's where you're no longer using fat, and no one is going to get through a marathon at zone four. No one on the planet has ever done it. No one ever will. Not zone four heart rate.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the mental aspect of running slow, right? Because when you're running slow all the time, I know that, you know, it helps us feel great that we are able to uninjuredly get all the mileage in. But then on the flip side, you know, you always have that thing in your mind, did I do enough speed training? So can you go to that a little bit?
Or you could be in an extreme like me, punching the air and sounding like a crazy person, swearing and all over the place. I hear you, you know, I get it. I need to eat something. I'm starving here. But anyway, we tell me the question again. I just got totally sidetracked.
Yeah, no worries. So maybe talk a little bit about like mental strategies, mental resilience. Like how does running slow help you with your resilience and all that?
Got it. And you meant the mental aspect, the challenge of being able to do that.
Yeah, because I know that running, you know, slow can, you know, having that patience and discipline and then getting the miles in is exciting. It's also not exciting because you get nervous about not having maybe run fast enough, even though we know we don't have to run fast enough. But maybe talk to us about how slow-paced running can help our mental resilience.
Sure. Well, first of all, college students refer to that easy pace, that zone two, where, you know, 80-85% of what they do is this zone two easy pace, you know, minute and a half, minute slower or 2 minutes slower than marathon race pace. And college students refer to those paces as junk miles. You'll hear that term, junk miles. But junk miles, like I said, are like a huge majority of what they do. They absolutely recognize that's what they need if they're going to do a half marathon, marathon, even 5K, 10K. Most of their miles, 5K, 10Kers, are junk miles because the majority, even 5K, 10K, are fat consumption. You know, you slowly get to a point where you can go farther and farther, and you meant the mental challenge of being slow. You know, oh my God, I got to do this slow pace again. That's where groups can help out. You know, you can talk and suddenly you've just gone 10 miles and you don't realize it because you've had this stupid conversation about the worst junk food on the planet that none of you would ever eat. And it makes no sense, that conversation. But for some reason, you've just suddenly gone 10 miles and you know, didn't really think about it. That's where groups can help. But yeah, slowly you get to a point where the challenge of going farther, you know, you're not on a treadmill with a TV set, you know, you're just out there. You can also use little things like, you know, I'm going to run to the next tree or I'm going to run to the next light pole. And you can just break it up that way if you don't have somebody to talk to and you're on your own. And I'm going to maintain the same pace, but I'm going to run to the next thing. You know, you just push yourself, okay, and divide it up. So it's 1 mile more, and pretty soon 1 mile more, the next tree, the next building, whatever it is, adds up in miles and miles and miles, because in your mind you've kind of broken it up. And then eventually you get to that point where you're you know, 2 hours of zone two becomes like, oh, all right, no big deal.
Yeah, it so becomes, I guess you get a different concept of time, right? Because during marathons, you're going to run faster.
A little faster, yeah, absolutely. And you're going to be out there longer. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you kind of get used to it. Of course, a marathon, depending on where you are, can either be really, really scenic or can be really, really exciting with like an inner city race, like, you know, LA, New York, Chicago, Boston, you know, those are massive races with thousands, you know, millions of people. The LA used to count 1 million people on the sidewalks. I don't know how they came up with that number, but then it gets a little exciting and you have bands and, you know, that all these distractions they throw into these races. I have a hard time with bands because I have a rhythm that I like to maintain. The band throws off my rhythm, you know, my running rhythm.
Put those headphones on, David.
I know, but then you got to have the right song. And
that's
so
true.
I in my head, I have a song. I'll just, you know, think of a song and I'll run with that song if I'm alone.
Yeah.
Or actually, here's an idea. If you're hitting the wall and you're really pushing and pushing and pushing on a marathon, on a race, not so in training, but, and you want to get to the finish line, count your steps. Like every fourth step, it becomes a mantra. So you're really taking your conscious mind away from, you know, the pain or the suffering or the whatever it is. You create a mantra, which is what mantras do. They're just a rhythmic, nonsensical, you know, it's just this rhythmic slogan that means nothing.
Yeah.
And counting your steps from a real yogi, he said, yes, that works, because I asked him years ago. That really is a mantra. It is a nonsensical series of things, in this case, numbers, that add up to nothing. You're just 1, 2, 3, you know, and it is a rhythm that keeps you going at a certain rhythm. And that is a mantra. And so late in your race, when you're really struggling, just like every fourth step, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, like every second step, every fourth step, just keep going, count them. I found every fourth step for me, I hit 100, I'm another mile in.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's brutal. I can't believe you did it for that long. I'm going to try it though during my next marathon, and I'll let you you know how that goes.
I've gone miles that way. When you're, you know, Ironman, you know, you're,
oh boy.
Yeah, it works.
Wow.
It works. Keeps your running rhythm and yeah. You don't think about anything. I was once with a pack that I was pace leading 20 years ago. We were running down an alleyway, so there really wasn't anything to see. It was near the beach, but it was an alleyway. And somebody, we were like a mile 16 or 18 or whatever it was. We were coming to the end of our run. And somebody said, you know, my hip is starting to hurt. And someone else, my knee is starting to hurt. And suddenly my hip was starting to hurt. My knee was starting to hurt. And the more and more people, you know, my quads are sore, my calf is sore, and my quads and my calf is starting to. And so I said to everybody, okay, here's what we do. And we're still running. And I said, okay, count your steps. And we had another mile and three quarter to go. And I said, just count your steps. Every fourth step, just to yourself, count your steps. And that will be a mantra. And everyone started doing it. And my pain and agony went away. And everyone kept up. Everyone maintained their pace. And it worked. And everyone said, hey, yeah, you know, that really kind of works. And all the pain kind of went away because our conscious mind was in this mantra state. And so there you go. The little tip.
Yeah, that's a good one. Thank you for that. Another question in regards to running slower for the people that have been running fast and are now slowing down. Talk to us a little bit about what they can expect when it comes to, you know, changes in cadence. Obviously, when you run fast, you probably use different shoes now that we have so many shoes available.
Ooh.
And those sort of things, you know, just the biomechanical stuff.
Got it. Well, here's the interesting thing. You can maintain basically the same mechanics pretty much from running in place versus running slow versus running fast. Or, you know, so you just don't push back as hard. If you're pushing back, if you're really engaging your glutes and your hamstrings, you know, there are a lot of people that at the end of a marathon, their quads are really, really sore. Well, you don't really want to do that because then you're engaging your quads. Your quads make you go up and down, not necessarily forward. Now, if you're angled, you know, forward, which you want to be anyway, and you're using your quads, you're basically pogo sticking. You're going up and then landing forward and up and landing forward. And no one at home can see my hand, but you're basically pogo sticking your way across a marathon, which is really inefficient. You're quad dominant and you want to be hamstring glute dominant. You want to use the back of your legs more than the front of your legs. Unless you're going up a hill. If you're going up a hill, you use your quads more. All right, because that gets you up. But If you push back harder, you're going to go faster. If you don't push back as hard, you're going to go slower. Now, if you push back farther, you'll go faster. So yes, for some people, maybe a lot of people, maybe more than most, if you do, like you mentioned, change your mechanics, I would say most pro athletes aren't really changing their mechanics. They're just pushing back harder to go faster, or not pushing back as hard to go less fast. Their rhythm is the same. You know, their mechanics are the same. They're just not pushing back as hard to go slower. But for most of us, maybe 60%, I don't know, wild guess. I don't know any numbers on it, but you would push back. You would not push back with your glutes, your hamstring, as far as you would if you're going faster. If you wanted to go faster, you extend the length of your stride, and that will get you to go faster. There is science that shows clearly that people, us normal athletes especially, do go from shorter stride, pushing back harder, to longer stride, because we can use slightly different muscles. So as you progress in your marathon, you may find that your stride length may change because you're using different muscles, because you're getting tired, you're fatiguing the muscle. So going maybe short and quick, and then your longer effort, slower muscle, you know, slower stride, maybe will engage slightly different muscles, and that you kind of do unconsciously just because you're getting tired. Your muscles are getting tired.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, David. Thank you so much for all of this. I really appreciate you. Oh, and good luck with the LA Marathon.
Thank you very much. And thank you for allowing me to just spew this stuff endlessly. You know what I mean?
Thank you again, David, for your graciousness and time that you spent speaking with me. I super appreciate everything that you've taught us. And thank you guys, you listeners, for hanging in there. If you do have questions, you can reach out to me. I can connect you with David, or you can find his information in the show notes. Please let us know how you liked this content. And if you have any content suggestions, also feel free to message us with that. The easiest way to reach us is on Instagram. Again, we are at Running Podcast, and stay tuned for next week. And until then, have a great week of running. Thanks for tuning in. For more information and marathon running news, please head to www.marathonrunningpodcast.com, and we'll be back next week.